If you in the back can hear me, okay, woohoo, all right. Good job. And George Whitefield preached to 30,000 people without a microphone. And I don't think we're quite 30,000 here, so maybe we don't really need one. As Pastor Dan was talking about the spiritual battle and spiritual war we're in, I know that it's easy after one day that's been a very, very bad day, I don't know, for us weak, wimpy Americans to look up and say, why? You know, after maybe a week, or maybe it's after a month, or maybe it's after a year. I know for me, up to this point in my life, God has blessed me to see how He has held on to me. I love that the passage, the phrase in the passage we read in Psalm 73. You know, God has held me by my right hand. God has held me. He's holding on to me. And so He's blessed me to see Him holding on to me for 31 years up to this point. So I'm 31 years old, and even if I don't look it, I might. I was born in Seattle, Washington, not far from here. And I grew up as a Seattle Seahawks fan, which meant most of the early years of my life, I struggled with depression. Still am a rabid Seattle Seahawks and Portland Trail Blazer fan. Enjoy sports very much. My parents met each other at, it's called Western Baptist College in Salem, Oregon. And my father was a pastor. And when I was about 4.5 years old, I asked my father about heaven and how can I get to heaven. What my father did is he explained to me that there's this thing called sin, this thing in my heart, even as a 4.5 year old. And even as a 4.5 year old, I could see the rebellion in my heart. I mean, I was already doing things that were contrary to my parents. There are a lot of different examples, and even, you know, maybe they're less. And I wasn't dealing drugs or anything like that at that point in time. But I mean, there was a ladder in the back of our house, and I knew I wasn't supposed to, but I'd climb up the top of the house and be running around, and my mother would hear footsteps, and she'd be freaking out. You know, I'd climb up on top of things and jump off and break various parts of my body and have to be in the emergency room on numerous occasions. And just saw that even in my own 4.5-year-old heart. And I see my son Caleb is here. He's 5 years old. You can see that in his life. My father explained to me that Jesus Christ, what He did is He came to pay the penalty for my sin. The penalty for my sin was this thing called death. And death is both physical and spiritual. Physically, we die because of sin. But also spiritually, we're cut off from God because of sin. What Jesus did is He died in my place for sin, for that sin. And if I put my faith and trust in Jesus Christ, then He would take the sin off my little 4.5-year-old shoulders and put it on Jesus Christ and open up the communication, the communion that I could have with the God of the universe starting at that point for the rest of my life. And Ephesians 2, that Pastor Dan, he preached on last week, he could apply it to myself way back then. You know, verse 3, I also lived among them at one time, gratifying the cravings of my 4.5-year-old sinful nature and following his desires and thoughts. Like the rest, I was by nature an object of wrath. But because of His great love for me, God, who is rich in mercy, made me alive with Christ, even when I was dead in transgressions. It is by grace that I have been saved. And I saw that and I experienced that at 4.5 years old, and I've seen Him carry me through. Shortly after that, my parents were separated and divorced, and I experienced what it meant to live in a single-parent family with my mother and my two sisters. And my mother remarried when I was 9, and to a man who already had children, so then we had a family recon? Blended family. And then they had other children, so I ended up having half-sisters, sisters, half-brothers, stepsisters, stepbrothers, and all these things. So if you have ever grown up in a single-parent home or a divorced family or a blended family, I understand those things. And hold on just one second. Gadab, il faut pas que tu parles maintenant. Ok, c'est correct. And this morning, my wife is not here. She's with my daughter Constance, who is sick this morning, and so I'm doing having father and son time, which is really fun this morning. When I was 17, I was looking at going to college, and I was thinking about attending University of Oregon and to get a degree in architecture. And then at that point, I could just get involved in my local church, and yeah, as a deacon or something, have a 2-car garage, maybe have a boat, and you know, God's going to be happy with me. But I thought, you know, it would be a good thing to probably go to Bible college first, at least 1 year, and understand this thing that I say that I believe as a Christian. During that year, what God did is He grabbed my heart. And He showed me that at that point, from when I woke up in the morning until I went to bed at night, every day all I wanted to do was serve Jesus Christ. That was it. And not perfectly, but that was my desire and what He did in my life. And so then I continued in Bible college. I decided, you know, why go become an architect? So continue and study the Bible. And my third year of Bible college, which was on the East Coast, I received an email from a guy that said, hey, Rob, my name is Brian. I forget what your name is, but could you please give me a call? And that was the beginning of the email days back in 1998. And so I called this guy. And he told me about a mission trip getting ready to go to France that summer, the summer of 1998. And everything was ready. They had a team together. They had everything ready except for one thing. They didn't have a leader to lead their team to France that summer. Rob, would you be willing to lead our team to France this summer? And I had never been on a mission trip. And I didn't speak French. And I didn't know who this guy was. So... said, listen, I'll pray about this. And did some research and prayed about that over the next few days and contacted some people some godly men around me, and called them back and said, all right, I'm willing to do this. And went to France the summer of 1998. God did a couple of things in my heart that summer. One of the things is God showed me that there are some incredible things happening in the French-speaking world, but by and large, the French-speaking world is a very spiritually desolate place. There's a lot to be done in regards to talking about and telling people about Jesus Christ and living out our walk with Jesus Christ here in the English-speaking world. This is true. But my goodness, the desolation spiritually in the French-speaking world really broke my heart. Second thing that happened that summer was there were different teams from all around the world that came together to help plant a French-speaking church. There were teams from Africa, teams from Kenya, teams from English-speaking Canada, the United States, Italy. And one of those teams was from French-speaking Canada, French-speaking Quebec. And we had leadership meetings every morning. And everybody in that group was either bilingual or monolingual English, like myself. I was an American. And so we decided we were going to have our leadership meetings in English. And there was one particular person, she was a girl, she was the leader of the team from Quebec, that was very frustrated about that. Because she, as a French speaker, from French-speaking Quebec, went to French-speaking France to help plant a French-speaking church. And everybody's speaking in English. So, and she struggled in English. And she actually had to have an interpreter and somebody to help her make sure she understood everything that was going on in our leadership meetings. Well, I got to know this girl, and after about 2.5 weeks, I said, boy, I would love to marry a girl like this. And about 2.5 years later, she came to the same conclusion about me. And and if you look in your bulletin and pull out, there's a picture in that bulletin, and there's a picture of my family and my wife Martine, and that's her. And her English is phenomenal today. She's bilingual, and as am I. And we got to know each other. We were married in 2002, and with a desire to go to the French-speaking world And I got to know her pastor in Quebec, who had a passion for planting French-speaking churches in Quebec. And he invited me, his name is Louis, to come to Quebec. And he said, Rob, if you come here with Martine, I'll coach you, I'll mentor you, I'll give you as many resources and everything possible for you to be successful and part of a French-speaking church planting movement here in Quebec. And so in 2004, we actually moved to Quebec full-time. And that was about the same period of time when we started getting to know New Heights. Titus Fulden became a very good friend of mine, who you might have heard of. That guy, he's kind of off the wall. Love him and Stephanie. And God has been incredible there. We have a couple of photos. What I'd like to show here, just three photos, and then I'll be done. So in 2004, we moved there, began learning French. After nine months to a year, you start hating it. You wake up in the morning, say, could everyone just stop speaking French, please? Speak English. You love it at first. You hate it after a year, and about 2 years into it, you start loving it again. And during that time period also, we were planning on what this church planting movement could look like. And in 2007, put together a core group of people, along with another guy and his wife, who we would co-lead this together. And we moved about 45 minutes away from Louis's church to plant a daughter church there in the city of St. Jerome. And then in January of 2008, we began Sunday morning services. And through this whole entire time, this church, New Heights Christian Church, is praying for us and supporting us financially. And guys are calling every once in a while and saying, how are you guys doing? Every interaction we had with New Heights, from the elders, are saying, how are you guys doing? All right, emotionally, spiritually, financially, how can we pray for you? And we just see the passion that New Heights has to be a light for Jesus Christ here in Kent, as well as arms around the world, places like Ecuador, as well as Quebec and other places. And so we see this, New Heights actually having a hand in what's happening in Quebec, Canada. And so January of 2009, we had our one-year anniversary in St. Jerome this year, since we began Sunday morning services every Sunday. And God has blessed phenomenally. There were five people baptized last year, and there are going to be six more baptized in the next couple of weeks. And we've seen people come to know Christ. We've seen a number of people who are broken in their lives, in their marriages, who have been healed. And just God has done some incredible things there. And we're also part of planting a brand new church. We'll talk about it in a second. But this is our one-year anniversary, and about 130 people showed up to it. It was a phenomenal time. And the church has just exploded. It's a church of well over 100 people at this point in time. And so here's another photo. I think we have another one after this. Maybe. Maybe not. Do we? Okay. Well, this was the one-year anniversary. But then I think we do have another photo that shows kind of a church planting movement right here. And so there are a few churches that have been planted. St. Jerome is a church here. Worked very hard on these diagrams so they would be scientifically accurate for you. So here's St. Jerome. And right now there are small groups together for a church in Saint-Eustache, and we're planning on doing another church, the green on the bottom here, the Plateau of Montreal. This is the island of Montreal here. Montreal is an island. And so, God is just growing this church planting movement in the Montreal region. So praise God for that, and we're looking forward to see what He's going to do next.